And I'll ask Andrea to call the roll. Do you call the roll?
We don't usually for the committee, but everyone.
Okay, why don't we introduce everybody that's here, introduce ourselves.
Hi, I'm Chris Lynn and Walter. I'm the Chief Quality Officer at Desert. Linda Evans, Chief Strategy Officer of Community Advocacy for the Desert Care Network.
Hi, I'm Joe Headley. I'm the Social Work Manager for the hospital.
And Dale Barnhart. I'll be working with the Healthcare District on some quarterly inspections.
Les Sandel, Vice President of the District and Chair of this committee.
Carol Rogers, Director.
Karen Warhawk, Director.
Stephen Hike, Accounting Manager.
Ezra Kaufman, District Resident.
Lacey Houston, Chief Operating Officer.
Chris Christensen, Interim CEO.
Andrea Hales, Special Assistant to the CEO and Board Relations Officer.
Donna Craig, Senior Program Officer.
Okay. Okay, let's do public comment first. Is there any public comment? We allow people to bring up anything that's not on the agenda that's within the jurisdiction of the district and this committee. We limit comments to 3 minutes. We can't take action on items and may not even respond to it, but you may offer input and we may bring it up later. So is there any public comment at this time? No? Okay. Before we approve the agenda, before we approve the agenda, there's going to be a couple changes. One is that under old business, we're going to have an update on the homeless discharge policy from Desert Regional and any work that's been done with the other hospitals. And item number 3 under new business is going to be deferred because Michelle Finney is on jury duty and didn't ask me for an excuse. So, do I have a motion to approve the agenda?
I move.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. The minutes of December 20th are attached. Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes?
I have a question about the minutes.
Sure.
The very end, the presentation was withdrawn for legal input and board discussion. Would you like to characterize what legal input and board discussion occurred?
I can do that after. I mean, it's not part of the minutes, but I'd be happy to. I guess I can do it now before we approve the minutes. It was discussed that that anything provided in writing at this meeting does need to become part of the minutes of this meeting. And anything that's verbal can be summarized in the minutes, and it's also, of course, available on. Audio tape, but that tenant has the right not to share proprietary data, which is, in other words, non-public data, to be published in our minutes. And so that's why we are going to have a presentation on Leapfrog, but there will not be, I don't know if you're going to use any slides, but there will not be any proprietary data that is documented. That's the answer to your question.
No.
Okay. All right. Move the minutes approved?
Yes, they were approved.
Okay. All right. Old business update on homeless discharge issues.
So I'd like to introduce us. Murray has introduced himself, Joe Headley. Joe has been working tirelessly on actually putting feet to the homeless policy and the laws through California. And I asked him to come and share with everybody how the stats looked for January, what some of our challenges are, and as the healthcare district goes out and we all represent the homeless for our community, give you some more information about what's actually coming through the doors so that you have some awareness. So go ahead, Joe.
Thank you. So we rolled out, this new state law went into effect January 1st, and
can I just ask you a question? I'm sorry. The law went into effect January 1st, but does it have to not be implemented by July 1st?
So parts of it have to be implemented by July 1st. Our hope and expectation, and actually we've been able to kind of implement everything pretty much.
The only thing July 1st that had to be implemented was a community networking and getting outside hospitals and everywhere written agreements and a log. All the other statutes of the law had to be implemented by January 1st.
Okay, thanks for clarifying that. Sorry.
So, the fortunate thing, one of the many fortunate things about working at Desert Regional and Tenet is that they value social work and really believe in the and social work kids as part of the interdisciplinary team. So I have 16 social workers that work in the hospital. Six of them work in the ED, which is where we're primarily intervening with the homeless patients that came in. So we've been tracking, we have January numbers. One of the first things we did was, with the, actually the help of Linda, is we got a good relationship going with the Coachella Valley Rescue Mission, who is accepting every patient that we refer a document over to them. They screen the patient and they get back to us within a half hour, day or night, in terms of whether they can accept the patient. So we have a disposition option for every homeless patient that kind of comes through the door. So the other piece that we have in place, we've got a clothing closet. You have to provide the patient's clothing if they want clothes. So we have a great clothing closet, which you can access to the hospital 24/7 to get people clothes. We offer them a prescription if they need discharge meds. We're also offering them transportation to wherever they want to go, including the mission in Indio. And also medical follow-up. We connect them to give them resources for community mental health clinics as well as kind of primary care clinics. I was kind of surprised with the January numbers, which we had, this was in-house and ED total. These are unduplicated patients, so there might have been a patient that came in once or twice or three times, but they were only counted once. So there were 78 patients that we saw in January, 78 homeless patients. But only 12% of them accepted a referral to the Coachella Valley Rescue. And I talked to my staff about why that is, and a lot of patients don't want to go to Indio. They want to stay in Palm Springs, they want to stay in Cat City. Whatever they perceive as being services and resources for themselves are here, and they feel like that's just too far to go. Another 14% we referred up to the RI Crisis Clinic up the street. You know, the voluntary mental health clinic, which we use as a resource all the time. But which I was kind of surprised that many patients were appropriate for that service, which tells me that there are patients who have active mental health issues that may not necessarily require a inpatient psych unit, but were appropriate for a voluntary treatment.
And they can take them for 24 hours?
It's a 23-hour program, yeah. What else? We referred three for substance abuse treatment. Two of them went to inpatient psych. We have a relationship with the Musicland Hotel, which we can voucher patients through funds through the district. So a couple of patients went to the Musicland Hotel for a few nights who were kind of medically compromised and probably not, they couldn't do all their ADLs, so they weren't appropriate for the rescue mission.
What hotel was that?
I'm sorry?
I didn't hear what hotel.
Musicland.
It's right on Palm Canyon down here.
Okay.
And then others.
I'm sorry, can I interrupt?
Sure.
If they couldn't deal with their ADLs, how would they deal with them at the Musicland Hotel?
We could connect them with a home care nurse to go out or other options, make sure they have food. They just kind of needed to get, they needed to get stronger, basically. Or they had a family member, too, that could assist them or a friend.
Okay.
And then others went to, we had seven who went to their cars. What else? Two were taken into police custody. So that's kind of the breakdown of, and the not too many, like I said, not too many people wanted to go to the rescue mission. 50 of the 78 accepted transportation resources. So we have a contract with Greyhound. If the patient wants to go wherever, we can voucher them. Greyhound, bus, taxis, bus passes, all these, again, resources we have in the district that are really beneficial to this population.
What about people that need skilled nursing care, either who are being discharged from the hospital or whatever, that need IV antibiotics, wound changes, things like that?
So that's, if they're uninsured, well, it's a challenge in the county with patients who have straight Medi-Cal, and because no home care agency accepts Medi-Cal patients in the county. So what we encourage, patients are better off if they have IHP or Molina kind of manage Medi-Cal programs, because they will get home care nursing, home care IVs. What we end up doing with a lot of the patients is they go to our skilled nursing facility on 4 East as a charity case, until we can get the We're probably, it's really shot up in the last 5 days. We've had 18 homeless patients in the evening in the last 5 days. And I think what, and it's too early to predict this, but weather and also towards the end of the month, people are out of money and are desperate and need help.
So a patient comes into the ED, if they're not hospitalized, do you still offer the same service?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So what happens is they come in, they register with the registration people. There's three questions that are asked that determine whether they fit the criteria for homeless. We're immediately contacted and we kind of start the ball rolling. We're also getting calls from the Cancer Center and other, and ICON, when they have homeless patients over there as well.
Because that all falls under the legislation of having to,
correct,
inpatient or outpatient, wherever they present. And some of the challenging cases, and Joe can fill in this a little bit more, is we have some long-term patients, as he said, that we don't know where to place them. They really could benefit from home health care. They maybe have straight Medi-Cal, so they don't have that option. The skilled nursing facilities are full, or the patient refuses to go. So what happens is, without disclosing specific HIPAA things, we'll have a patient stay for several weeks. They're refusing treatment in the inpatient facility that might help them and might better them so that they can care for themselves. They're refusing those types of things. They're refusing opportunities for placement. And then the only thing that the hospital is left with it being able to do is to evict them with police through the courts or with police assistance. It's very sad. You know that as soon as that happens, that patient's going to be back on the door. And so it's a dilemma that obviously we keep them in-house for now, because the other option is to send them out to their death, knowing that they're going to come back worse than they already are. So as you move forward with, you know, in the district and stuff, those, we have quite a number of those complex cases, and we would love to partner to figure out how to care for these, provide them the charity care they need, but also have them cared for in the right location, because it's not necessarily an inpatient bed. And then what happens if they're taking up the inpatient beds, it's backing up our throughput through the ED, which limits our ability to get community members through quickly, because the beds are all backed up, so.
Can I make the assumption, because that's gonna be my next question based on it, that most of the homeless people you see in the ER and the hospital are not undocumented? They're citizens?
I think that's the same assumption. I could pull numbers.
So therefore, my second part of the question is, they're eligible for Medi-Cal, mostly. Mm-hmm. And do you have a navigator that helps them enroll?
So there's, in the ER, we have, so we have a really robust Medi-Cal eligibility counseling program in the hospital and in the ER. So the admitting rep identifies that the patient does not have insurance. The MECS worker meets with them immediately.
Okay, and then when you say they have straight Medi-Cal, meaning they don't have managed Medi-Cal,
right,
how do we change that? How do we encourage them, or what do we need to do to get them into a managed Medi-Cal so they can get those additional services?
It's kind of a fine line around patient rights. We're not supposed, you know what I mean? That they, it's, well, what happens if you don't opt for one of the, when you get Medi-Cal, if you don't opt for IHP or Molina, then the county assigns you, unless you specifically say, I just want straight Medi-Cal. Most people aren't thinking.
I was gonna say, why would they want to do that?
People have this perception that they have more choices if they're not in a managed Medi-Cal program.
Even the homeless people feel that way?
I don't know.
That's the part, yeah. I don't get. I mean, it's sort of like, I want my freedom to not avail myself of services.
Right.
Okay.
And IHP is amazing. I mean, they've got a lot of really good behavioral health.
Oh, absolutely.
Programs, substance abuse programs. They've got complex case managers that we can contact immediately, and they will come meet with the patient and get them linked.
So when you sign a person up, and they are eligible to become, it's like emergency Medi-Cal or Medi-Cal pending, that turns them into a fee-for-service, a straight Medi-Cal, until they make that choice.
Right.
Should they make that choice. What's that time frame between I mean, within a couple of days, we could get the medical.
We can get the emergency medical for the hospitalization.
Right. How quickly does that patient?
So it's typically 30 to 45 days, and it involves like an appointment. They have to show up in the medical office, and we can bump that up also based on diagnosis. If somebody's a new dialysis patient or has an AIDS diagnosis, if those are diagnoses, that will kind of expedite the medical process.
And yes.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, and could you share with us what's going on in terms of coordinating all this with other hospitals, i.e. Eisenhower?
Yeah, we have until July to get the final coordination efforts together. I think right now all of us are scrambling because the volume has been so large in January and February that we're working collaboratively with local resources such as Coachella Valley, and thank you to Linda and Joe who really worked through the details of that. So our next step, I have the contact at Eisenhower, our next step is to get together with all of the community resources, all the hospitals, and then develop more written documentation as far as what our agreements would be with all of them. And Linda's helping to coordinate that. We have a number of appointments set up for some more shelters and some other avenues. And then we'll have the joint hospital meeting where we'll be sharing the resources with all of them. So.
And are we still pursuing, even though we can't use the firehouse in North Palm Springs, are we still pursuing something like that?
Not my understanding. I mean, the hospital's not driving that. My understanding of the city of Palm Springs is not necessarily driving that. Through the recent HEAP funding, both Martha's and City Rescue Mission received funding for additional beds that they'll be able to add on. And I don't know if there's
Martha's also is going to have 8 beds from IHP, and then HEAP funding will pay for the nurse.
At Martha's.
Discharge, yes.
Right. And I know that Greg Rodriguez gave an update on Roy's, the conversion of Roy's to 9,200 beds of a kind of a augmented. Quite honestly, it sounds like it's going to be somewhat of a mental health and homeless shelter, with the potential of that being completed in June of 2020. So we've got another year or so before that happens, with all of the services available to help people get and gain that independence. But they anticipate that that's pretty much going to be where people live for some period of time while they're trying to seek help.
So that's going to be, I was told it's something like a quote, nursing home for those, it's long-term care at Roy's?
It's a board and care. They call it an augmented board and care to address mental health and or homeless patients. It's geared toward mental health because that was the crisis that the Valley identified. But obviously with the crossover between homeless. Lisa, I don't know if you have anything else to
The only key thing to add to that will be used for the whole county. It won't be just for Coachella Valley residents. And you're right, it's an augmented board and care. They do, from according to conversation with Jim Grisham, believe that many of those individuals will be from the homeless population, but with some sort of dual diagnosis aspect of it.
Okay, I would just encourage, thank you for the report.
Yeah, one more question?
Yeah, I just want to say something. I would encourage the statistics that you gave us to make those widely available to the press and community so that, again, as the community is looking at the entire homeless question, I haven't been reading much about hospital discharges and ED stuff, so I would encourage you to make that stuff public.
My last question, maybe not, it depends on of what else we can think of to about this important issue. It has to do with mental health services and continuity of care in that area. I know, you know, a 23-hour clinic isn't it. Are there other resources being planned or developed to help? Because we know that the majority of the population, homeless population, has mental health issues.
So with that, again, compared to the IHP Medi-Cal patients, so their outpatient mental health benefits, it's carved back to the county, so IHP doesn't manage that piece. However, we have there's two social workers we know at IHP that will help us get patients connected with individual providers as well as day treatment programs and stuff, regardless of whether they're supposed to or not. I mean, the challenge, as you know, is the whole telecare situation and the saturation that we experience with them.
I understand the mental health clinic in Desert Hot Springs is open to all, not just Medicare anymore, but I had a patient at the free clinic said that he couldn't get an appointment.
My understanding is in Borrego as well, but it's about 2 months to get in an initial appointment if you're not in crisis.
Okay.
I mean that's true of people with good insurance too.
Exactly.
I mean, I know that Winstone has a long wait,
yeah.
and people in private practice have long waits and closed practices. There's just a shortage of mental health providers in the valley. Well, all over, but especially in
the coastal. The other crisis that I was going to bring up, and this is the perfect opportunity, is the pediatric influx of behavioral health patients. Mm-hmm. In the last 2 weeks, we've had at least 10 children, 16 and under, with the majority being 10 and under, that have suicidal ideation or otherwise want to harm themselves or a danger to others. We've had to extend their holds at least 2 to 3 times because there are no beds anywhere. So you're talking a child on a hold in our ED. The state's given us the emergency ability to flex them into other units at the hospital so that we can cohort them together in a safe location. But it's become an epidemic that's very, very frightening and very sad. And I think we have 4 in-house right now that we have no idea where to place.
And I attended the Hospital Association of Southern California meeting last week, the Inland Empire CEO meeting. So it encompasses CEOs from hospitals in Riverside and San Bernardino County, and brought up this concern as well, because there's very few, even Acadia, who we'll be building in Indio, their adolescent is 9 to 17. It's those 9 and unders that Loma Linda indicated. They put them in their general pediatric unit. That's the way they handle 0 to 9. The challenge is even those units are full, and the few places that do have 0 to 9 inpatient pediatric psych are at capacity, and several hospitals in the major main Riverside area are holding pediatric 5150s extensively because of lack of capacity, lack of resources. And we even try to call in county help to help find placement, and who, you know, where else can we reach out and who else can we call? Some of them are crossing county lines, and it's going into LA and Orange County, and they're even at capacity. It's a serious problem as of late. We've seen that, as you know, Lisa's been doing a lot of research and talking to folks, the EMS and first responders and school folks have been saying we're seeing more, but now they're landing for periods of time because of placement issues.
Without breaking HIPAA, do you have a sense of why these local teams?
I just got a report on the 4 that we have in the ED right now, and one's a 12-year-old boy who started acting out, saying he was going to hurt himself on the school bus. So, and this one was crossed over, brought up here from San Bernardino County, which I'm not sure why that happened. That's mm-hmm. another issue. Then we have an 11-year-old who came in from a group home, was aggressive and uncontrollable and uncontrollable. Police brought him in. He's been here 2 days. A 16-year-old came in last night, overdosed on Xanax, history of depression, and some early addiction issues. And then a 13-year-old who started hearing voices, has a history of cutting behavior and was suicidal. So they're all like pretty severe mental health issues. So.
I got to visit the Transitional Age Youth Center in La Quinta, much older youth than 11 and 12, but they have a lot of really good services for families. I don't know if there can be ways to resource parents, connect parents, whether it's not their children, but the adults in the situation.
I think it's the matter of once they're off the hold status, that you've got to implement that outpatient follow-up care, right?
Well, I personally hope that, you know, we know that this is a problem. I personally hope that we can move forward with our mental health, behavioral health initiative, and work with the hospital and the community and figure out what the solutions are.
Linda, are you guys also familiar with the county has just brought in a new group, and I want to say the acronym is ROCKI. And so it was driven by the CREST team concept. Then realizing how much time the CREST team has been spending at the different school sites. So this team has been brought in, and they're actually, the conversation that we're starting with them and the mental health location that Carol was referencing up at DHS is a potential very focused effort in DHS where they just work with the school districts, and these are specialized behavioral health in from elementary all the way through. So maybe we need to really push forward under that conversation, but it's a brand new team that even a lot of the county staff don't really know about, but maybe we need to really kind of expose what exactly is the purpose of this team.
Where's their area of focus right now?
So they're located in Cathedral City.
Okay.
But again, it's one
substance abuse, tied to substance abuse.
Yeah, it's tied to substance abuse and that. And then so that's why it's working with the Desert Hot Springs location because of their substance abuse program that they run out of there. But that may be something that we could maybe speed along to try and see if there's a way to start that. And then the other thing is Donna and I met with Palm Springs Unified School District representative for their mental health, and their actual clinic is underutilized right now, which is like what you're saying, is tying parents to actual resources. And so we could also share with you that point of contact to really maybe start closing this loop of referring people to resources that are close to home.
And the other thing is a follow-up to our teaming up with the Rescue Mission to just get a better coordinated effort, because they also have their documentation requirements just like we do, and they've kind of created a nice intake form for all the hospitals to utilize. There's the Health to Hope Clinic that's located at the Rescue Mission, and the CEO of that bill has indicated that there are probably 5 or 6 medical mobile units that are primary care and including behavioral health that are literally need to be deployed. And it's just because of, I guess, prioritization and referral management that they were not effectively utilized to their maximum. So we're working on setting up that meeting to figure out how can we utilize their Health to Hope mobile units in some of the areas that we know, or as an aid when we are seeing these patients come to the emergency room, as that immediate follow-up assessment so that they can start then utilizing the outpatient resources that are available in the community.
So could you include us in that meeting? Because we're having conversations with him as
good.
Well.
And I think UCR as well.
Yeah, everybody's already to the point where they're already announcing that there's a partnership between UCR School of Medicine and them. So
we have a separate meeting actually with Dr. Kim shortly after this. So I'll link that. It's not primary care recruitment, but we'll tie that in.
Okay, thank you. We're going to move on to the next item under new business, and that's update on LeapFrog hospital safety grade.
Sure. So LeapFrog, as I've done prior presentations, just to fill you guys in, is released twice a year, and our October score came out, and the facility rated at a C. When I did a comparison of hospitals in a 50-mile radius, last year over this year, there was a majority of hospitals that have slipped also to a similar level as our hospital. 11 in the area, we had one hospital that rated a D, 7 hospitals besides us that were a C, and 2 that reached an A status, one of which was JFK. The different things that LeapFrog looks at is our process and structure, as well as some of our different measures, such as infection control and safety measures. So just to go through and fill you in on what came about with our C rating this particular time.
Before you do that, can you just clarify the timeline?
I will, but yeah. Each measure is different.
Okay.
So I'm gonna do it with each measure.
Okay, thanks.
So the first one is infections, and the date range is infections between October of 2016 and September of 2017. And it has to do with our bloodstream infections, urinary tract, central line, and MRSA. We had one colon surgery infection, and because the denominator of colon surgeries that we do is very low, that had a high ranking on that score being impacted. Each measure rates about 3.4 to 4.7 towards the overall score, so it's pretty heavy. And the work that we're doing with this is to work with Coachella Valley skilled nursing facilities, Eisenhower, and the state of California Department of Public Health in a collaborative format that we're working on decreasing infection rates in C. diff. It's through a grant that we're all part of with Eisenhower. And we actually have significantly
funded by this group,
significantly decreased the infection rates over time. So This, the work that we did in 2018 was significantly lowered. Infection rates is probably going to hit in our next couple of leapfrog scores, but those measures hadn't been in place at that time. The next measure is surgical considerations. Has to do with whether surgical wounds open up after surgery, does there have to be a return to surgery, was there an accidental cut or tear. These date ranges are from October 15 through June of 17. We had reported last time that there was a foreign body left in surgery that we felt was incorrectly coded, and we did get that removed, so that was taken off of our score from the last time. And then shows as a not applicable this time because until it falls off of the reporting cycle, you'll see on the public website that it will say an NA for that because they're just whiting out that category for us. We've improved in all of those categories except death from complications. That continues to be a challenge to the hospital because of the high level of care outside transfers we get, and usually the surgery is a last chance for their loved one, and they want all efforts to be made to try and to correct whether it's a stroke or a heart attack, and we try a CABG, and then if they succumb within 30 days or the family makes them do not resuscitate after that, it will hit us in this category. So that continues to be hitting our score in this category. We're monitoring all of the cases and working heavily with our residency teams to see what we can do about better capturing the picture of the patient as they're coming in the charting so that the comorbidities and things are present and the risk factors as the patient goes into surgery are appropriately documented so that the observed to expected ratio of the mortalities will be more accurate. The next category is preventing errors. And this has to do with whether or not we have an MD electronic ordering, medication standards, staff working together to prevent errors. It is data from October 16 to September 17. Our patient satisfaction scores, there's two measures, communication about discharge and medications that are in there as well. We received the maximum points that we could for the yes-no questions, but our patient satisfaction scores still, we had not implemented the discharge lounge at that time, which has really improved our communication about discharge. We had not implemented yet ASK3-TEACH3, which really has improved our communication about medications and the patient understanding of medications at that time. So those increases in scores are not yet hitting the data. The next category has to do with preventing errors related to dangerous bed sores, patient falls, and embolisms in the blood, air bubbles. This is October 15 to June 17. This is one of the heaviest ranking categories, and in this particular measure is what really brought us from a B to a C. We had two falls with injury that happened in that reporting period, three patient falls with injuries actually. So they're gonna stay on our leapfrog score for several cycles of hitting us fairly hard, which will impact our score. Hopefully the next score will be able to be a B. But again, it's gonna be leveraged by those falls. Since the falls, we've done a number of things with our fall programs. Each unit has a fall champion. We have a fall committee that meets monthly. They look at each fall, and the falls with injuries have dramatically decreased in the past 18 months, 2 years. So we expect that the future of this score is going to increase, but it will stay with us due to the long time period that they stay on the record. And then pressure injuries was also an area that has dramatically increased, or improved, I should say, not increased, improved over the last 2 years, but there was some significant pressure injuries during that reporting period at that time. The next one is doctors, nurses, and hospitals. This is the last one. A lot of this is yes-no questions, but it's also patient satisfaction. A lot of data related to communication with doctors and nurses. This is satisfaction data from October 16 through September 17. We receive maximum points for our RN and ICU coverage since we have intensivists that are at the hospital 24/7. The patient satisfaction data It's pretty steady. It's about 1 to 2 points, as it was in the prior reporting system. We've done extensive work with patient satisfaction over the past year, doing bedside handoff validations so that we're scripting the nurses so that they're always using the same format for bedside report, scripting hourly roundings so that they're always asking, I'm here, can I help you go to the bathroom? Is there anything you need? Are you comfortable? And then another interesting point, pain management is just recently, as of January, come off of the satisfaction data, so they're not even asking those questions anymore. So I think that overall is going to help because they felt the pain management questions were leading to somewhat of the opioid crisis as we were trying to treat pain as the sixth vital sign, and you know, that led to over-medication as well. So we have a lot of, all this data is stuff that happened in mid-2017 or longer ago than that. So a lot of the good work we've done in 2018 hasn't been reflected in our scores, and we find ourselves right where the community average is for the C hospital ratings.
When's the next reporting period?
October would be November, December, January, March, April.
And what time frame does LeapFrog cover?
Each measure is different. That's why I reported it that way. The patient satisfaction data and infection data, they go, it's a year time period with about a 9-month delay. And the falls and the injuries and all of those things is more of a 2 to 3 year gap, and that's about an 18-month delay. So everything moves forward kind of slowly.
Do we expect the April LeapFrog data to be publicly released?
Yes, LeapFrog has always released their data publicly. It's the CMS star rating that for a whole year they didn't release the star results. So at that point, we remained a 1 from October of 2017. Even though we had moved up to a 2 in 2018, it wasn't publicly reported, so we're sitting at a 2 right now.
After the April, maybe you can't answer this, but after the April data is publicly released, can we go through the data publicly, and you can verbally tell us the things you're doing to improve that?
Yes.
Okay, good.
We'll be able to go.
Okay.
And you said that LeapFrog data is publicly reported. So the data that you gave us is reported, but not the the ways that the hospital is trying to solve the issue is not reported, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And to
so we'll look forward to that report.
Dr. Karen has a question.
Can you tell me how falls happen?
Sure. Falls can happen in a variety of ways. We found that a lot of the falls are our 30, 40-year-old patients that say, oh, I don't need help, I can get up. They just had surgery and they don't realize how weak their knees are. So that's one of our falls. So what we've done with them is increased education. I think another big fall risk is related to toileting. That's why once an hour now we ask, can we help you to the bathroom? Because we don't want people to have to wait for the call light. Or if it's somebody that's maybe a little older, a little confused because they're not realizing they're at home, they try to get out of bed by themselves and try to go to the bathroom themselves. So a lot of the falls are related to toileting. A couple of them have been related to an individual finishing their toileting, the nurse helped them, and the nurse will say, call for me or hit your call light when you're ready so they can give them privacy, and they'll try to stand up and wipe or do something like that without calling for help. So all of our measures for fall reduction have been around understanding those types of things better. For the confused patient, we have chair alarms that we purchased that if they start to get up from their chair, it will alarm. And now all of our beds have bed alarms that are set when appropriate. But a lot of it for the younger population is just educating them. You might think that you can stand up because you can reason with them and they're more likely to. But we think the biggest impact is that hourly rounding and asking them, can I help you to the bathroom? Or the confused patient say, I'm going to take you to the bathroom, rather than ask them. So.
The second question is, if you can explain to me one more time the deaths and the transport taking people off life support.
The what?
Deaths?
Yeah, so one of your measures is deaths.
Oh, okay,
life support.
Mortality rate as a whole, as far as how the nation looks at it, CMS or with our star rating or LeapFrog, they look at what they feel would be a treatable event and if the patient expired. So a treatable event might be you came in with a stroke. If we don't document really heavily, they came in with a stroke, but they also were end-stage diabetic, and they also had, you know, a CABG last year, heart bypass surgery last year, and all of these other things, then when they do the calculations, it may look like the likelihood of recovering from this stroke should be good, and it should be a treatable condition. So we have to paint the picture very well in the patient's medical record of everything that led up to it, so that when these measures are looked at, they're evaluating the entire patient case. It then comes out with a number that they assign to it, a case mix index number, and a mortality and morbidity risk number, and they assign a number to it, and then if the patient expires after that, they compare that to the number, and it gives us an observed versus expected based on the number. So we want to make sure.
I was just going to say, that's an issue of what the physician writes in the chart and what diagnoses they put down. And sometimes they just put down stroke, and they forget to put down
that he had a heart
diabetes,
attack.
History of heart disease, status post CABG, things like that. So that's that
part. That part. And then the other part is, we get transfers from strokes from all over. So the patient with a stroke will come in. They'll recommend that if they want to pursue treatment, we will need to take them to interventional radiology and try and remove a clot, for instance. If that's not successful, they'll tell them that's the only option. If it's not successful, then they choose to make the family member do not resuscitate, and they expire. Then that still shows as a hit against us because we took them to surgery as a chance to try and save them, and they expire. So that is a constant challenge in hospitals that are higher level of care. You're going to see that in your Loma Lindas and your, Riverside County, UCLA. You're going to see that because they're the ones taking those high-risk patients, and you sometimes get penalized for trying to do that surgery. So
it's one of the reasons why JFK got an A and we got a C, because we do some of these surgeries, treatments, everything else. And
correct.
They, okay.
Correct. That's definitely going to implicate.
That's it. Those are all my questions.
Mm-hmm. What are the dates or the next expected reports for CMS and STAR rating?
October. That releases every quarter. They, in the past year though, they've only released, so it came out in October, and then they released around January. And then if they release again, March, April, they may release around April. We get our STAR ratings internally, but the public, what they choose to put to the public has been put on hold because so many hospitals have stated instances like what I just shared is skewing the numbers, and it's not a fair measure of how well a hospital is doing because it doesn't take into account the small community hospital like High Desert that doesn't do central lines or have some of the complicated procedures compared to a hospital like Desert that does it all. So they're trying to create a better system of apples to apples, rather than just you have your scores here, but you're an apple, and your scores here, and you're an orange, and the public doesn't know how to. So that's why the CMS has taken a good year before publicly reporting again. They're really looking at how they do their analytics.
Interesting.
So I don't know the answer. LeapFrog is very steady, and what they're looking at in their time frames. CMS has been a little bit more over the board, and I don't know.
Yes. It's interesting. I think you know this. LeapFrog came out of the business groups and NCQA, which has been looking at quality for a long time. CMS, of course, is looking at paying the bills, and so they are looking at it from a somewhat different point of view and are have to listen to the hospital association more because they have contracts with them. So. Anything else on this?
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Do you have a particular method for tagging like the outside of patient rooms for any patients who are at a particularly higher risk for falls?
We do. We actually, the fall committee has created a yellow scheme. So they have a yellow armband that says fall risk. They have yellow socks, and they wear yellow patient gowns. and there's a yellow or red, depending on how high risk they are, staircase with somebody falling that goes outside your door. So most hospitals have some type of a fall risk type thing. The biggest thing though is no call bell goes unanswered, and that's what we're, our another hospital-wide initiative is that no matter who hears the call bell, whether you're an EBS worker walking by or the CEO walking by, you hear a call light, you stop it and say, what do you need? And then you stay with them until the right person can get there. Yeah, the no pass them. So that's our next big initiative that we're working on hospital-wide.
I really resented after my surgery a year and a half ago that I had to wear a falls risk bracelet.
Yeah. You're one of them.
So this next time they wanted to give me a yellow band to take camping with me, so everyone would know that.
Are there any other questions or public comment?
Yeah, I just wanted to make a statement that when I attended the Comprehensive Cancer Center event last month, just the, you know, the focus on safety around the hospital. Somebody was sitting in a chair and they spilled their coffee on the floor, and it was sort of, you know, in the path of somebody walking. Michelle Finney got some towels and cleaned it up herself. So, I mean, it just shows that, you know, that there's a big thing on patient safety and falls and things like that. I just wanted to make that observation.
Any other comments or questions? Okay, let's move on to the next item, which is a hospital inspection update. I think you all know that. Do you want to do the intro? Well, at the last board meeting, I believe the contract for our hospital inspector was approved. And I'm going to ask him, first of all, to tell us a little bit about himself, and then I'm going to ask Chris to sort of talk about the schedule.
Good morning. Dale Barnhart. I started at Desert Regional or Desert Hospital in 1981 and ended my career some 33 years later in 2014. The last 21 years were as the director of facilities. Prior to that, involved in hospital construction projects and even worked in nursing administration, not a nurse, but back in those days, the 80s, many of the hospital projects, construction, remodels, at least at our hospital, were kind of pushed forward from the nursing division. So I worked with those projects as well. And so since retiring, been doing a lot of traveling, but talking with Chris, we looked at this opportunity maybe to help the healthcare district and the hospital by doing quarterly inspections.
You want to say what's scheduled and what the plan is?
Yes. So we do have scheduled on March 5th to do the first inspection, and the units that will be done in this block will be 2, 3, 4, and 5 Sinatra and the finance area. So that's what's scheduled on this first quarter inspection round. So. You know, we'll get a feel for how long these are going to take. Obviously, you're both invited.
Well,
I'm sorry.
Too.
You as well. Forgive me.
So used to having two.
I've got to get used to that. So I do have, you know, the inspection schedule here if anybody wants one, as well as a copy of the facility inspection checklist that we'll be using as we.
And do you think that they'll be, we'll have a report by the next this
that,
meeting to talk about it?
Yeah, that would be the intent, is to have a report by the March meeting.
Can you give us more details in terms of what we're looking at? What's the inspection about? Maybe Dale can go into that.
Well, there's actually a checklist.
Yeah, there's a checklist here.
Some things as they go along will be added onto that checklist as well.
So this is kind of a standard one that.
Can you pass it?
Absolutely.
And I understand that this has been coordinated through the hospital, that this isn't administration has
it's a collaborative issue. So we're scheduled with hospital personnel.
some of the concern is, some of the problems at the hospital is cosmetic, that, you know, that the floors are old and they keep waxing over dirt, and so it doesn't look clean. Is some of the recommendations that we make, and we say, you know, that floors need to be remodeled, repaired.
I think the thing, the intention would be is to make note of what might be, you know, concerning, and then I think that can be addressed when we're actually meeting with hospital personnel, what we would, request, and then they can give feedback.
Are we going to work with maybe the nurse managers at each floor when we go there and get their input?
I don't think it's to that level. I think it's that.
It's a facilities inspection. I do think that if we notice, or if things are noticed and we bring it to the attention the hospital will respond.
Right.
I know, for example, what you're talking about, we've heard at the last couple governing board meetings about the refurbishment of every unit, and the lobby, so.
And I'm sure we'll get feedback as we're going through, you know, the inspection, and we'll take notes. And I think it's we've formulated this or structured this after the Grossmont inspections that they do at their hospital. So I think it'll fall very similarly, but it may have some adjustments to it based on the specific facility as well. So
I don't know. Linda, do you think that we could structure this so that when we come to each floor that we could see the nurse manager and let them know what we're doing, so that it just isn't poor people going and sticking their nose in there?
I think Michelle will work on the communication to the frontline staff and manager so that they know.
Yeah.
They really are used to inspections going on all the time between CMS, the state.
And they're all the nurses
OSHA.
Are informed, because the nurse sees somebody that they don't recognize.
Okay. I mean, I just feel comfortable walking and looking under their desks and.
I'm sure there are internal people that will be along with the inspection will. We'll have that communication.
Correct. And facilities as well, and I'm sure some of our staff will also point out, Carol, potentially those aesthetic opportunities for improvement.
okay.
given the chance to have it documented by an outside source.
I know we've been invited to participate, and I would like to participate. I don't know that we each need to spend 6 hours, and maybe we can.
No, and I think the intent with that is if you want to come at first, kind of see what's going on, or if you want to, come at whatever time is convenient.
And we should also try to make sure that we're not all there at the same time, and then nobody's there for 2/3 of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I plan to be there the full time.
Okay.
And I believe everyone's going to be here first and then go over together.
Oh, good.
Okay, but if somebody needed to join later, that's
yeah,
right.
Could,
yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, you could call me on my cell phone. Are you joining us, Chris?
I will be, yes.
Okay.
Michelle's aware also.
All right, any other comments or questions about the hospital inspection? Okay, before we adjourn, I just wanted to talk about the next meeting, which is on March.
It'll be March 21st as
well. 21st, and we would anticipate having a report about the first inspection, the charity care policy and estimated dollar amount provided for indigent care report, which was tabled for this time, will be given at that time. And is there any other items that you'd like to put on the agenda?
Yes. So, meeting here is really rough for Thursday morning for me. So I either need a time change or a meeting location change to work out. It's 40 minute drive here, 40 minute drive back on like a Thursday at 9:30, and I need to get to work. So it's flexible, but it's not always flexible.
Okay, I think we can talk about that. I know one of the reasons we're meeting now is because that's when the hospital CEO could be here.
Okay.
And but why don't we look into that?
Yeah, let's see. We'll find out what options that we have. Do you want to provide some time options in that?
Sure, I'll send you.
If you would.
Thursday's still good. The morning is still good. I just can't make it all the way to Palm Springs. I can make it to like Palm Desert. I could do it digitally from Palm Desert. I don't think they have the technology and it doesn't look like.
Yes, they do.
We do.
We have
WebEx available.
Rap may or may not.
They do.
Let's look into that. We'll look into that.
So I'm very flexible. I just, not Thursday.
Yeah. WebEx works great.
Perfect.
Okay. Did you have any other ideas?
And there's also the, I'm sorry, there's also the governing board meeting at noon on this Thursday as well. So that's kind of why it's been.
We have to be here and they have to be here for that. It starts at noon.
But we'll see what we can do to accommodate.
Yeah, my comment had to do with expansion of the membership on this committee to community advisors. And this, I know this has to go through board policy, but I've always said that, you know, that this is, the purpose of this committee is to be more transparent in terms of hospital operations and governance. And so I would personally like to see more community members be regular members of this committee and maybe a time change so that members of the community could come in. I know that I've had three people so far give me their cards, one gave me their resume that is eminently qualified to look at facilities as well. So, you know, I'm hoping that the board will approve the expansion of this committee to include community members as advisors.
At the board meeting next week, the subcommittee that talked about it is going to present some options and general discussion before it writes the final policy, and it'll be discussed at the board meeting.
Thank you.
And I think it's something that we need to keep in mind, you know, communicating with our partners at the hospital, what is, what is keeping their feedback in mind with increasing, you know, people to this committee as well. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, two of the people who expressed interest are actually hospital volunteers. And, you know, they have a stake in how wonderful their hospital is.
Mm-hmm. Again, the purpose of this committee is to make sure the terms of the lease mm-hmm. are complied with. And I'm certainly open to having volunteers on the committee. I think we need to talk about what their role will be and what their qualifications are, and be very clear about possible conflicts of interest. Mm-hmm. But you know, once those things are clarified, I'm certainly open to that. All right. Is there any other items to put on the agenda for next time? Okay. Well, we can always do it beforehand. Thank you very much.